From Iowa Public Radio, I'm Janine Beck, and this is The Exchange. It's been a year and a half since the worst natural disaster in state history, and at least one lawmaker is worried Iowans are forgetting about the communities devastated by floodwater. This morning on The Exchange, we discuss the latest recovery efforts and controversial legislation introduced to prevent future flood damage. The legislation restricts new development in the 500-year floodplain. Supporters say it will save millions of dollars when the waters rise again, but opponents argue it will impede growth and possibly wipe one community right off the map. We'll discuss the legislation next on The Exchange, but first, the news. Listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Janine Beck, and we are live from the Law Library of the State Capitol Building in Des Moines. Iowa has had serious flooding in 8 of the last 15 years, which has resulted in 8 presidential disaster declarations. The legislature is now considering a bill that would prevent certain new development in the 500-year floodplain. Advocates say it will save the state millions of dollars, but some are concerned about the impact on cities, and some communities feel like it could wipe them off the map altogether. Here to talk about this, several people, but we're going to start with Democratic Senator Rob Hoge of Cedar Rapids and the Intergovernmental Affairs Director for the Rebuild Iowa Office, Susan Judkins. Senator Hoge, let me just start with you. You have quoted a figure, and let me bring that up, that the state has an estimated $20 billion in damage over the past 25 years because of flooding.
That's right, Janine. That's about what the number is. It's a little high, but it's nearly that. If you include primarily, it's the flood of 93, which was about $5 billion in damage. The flood in 2008, which was $8 to $10 billion. And then we've had, since 1990, we've had 13 presidential disaster declarations because of flooding. If you add all those up, it totals nearly $20 billion.
That being said, then what needs to happen this session, and do you have the political might to make it happen?
Well, Janine, we're going to try really hard. The message for Iowans is we need to change. You know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. We have got to change the way we manage our watersheds and our floodplains. And I know that a lot of people say, well, but I've got this great development I want to do in the floodplain. The problem is, since 1967 in Cedar Rapids, we knew there was a chance of a flood of this magnitude, and we had billions of dollars of investment in downtown Cedar Rapids, which then flooded in 2008. We're not trying to stop development. We want to shape development. We want to make sure development is not being put in harm's way. We want to make sure that that development, which is taking place in a floodplain, is flood-proof. And we need to change that. We also need to change the way we manage waters upstream in a watershed. But you know, we're sitting here with all kinds of winter precipitation warnings that 2010, we're already farther ahead towards flooding than we were in 2008. And Iowans have got to change. We need government to change. We need businesses to change. Cities, counties to change. We need individuals to change so that we can stop this devastation that we've been experiencing.
All right, Susan Judkins. Last session, there was a lot of legislation to help flood victims. A year later, what do you still need from the legislature this session? What's on the agenda?
Well, we have some long-term policy proposals, but the one we're discussing today that would improve how we manage our floodplains is actually one that has been under consideration since last year, when the legislature passed House File 756, requiring the Water Resources Coordinating Council to develop recommendations with the input of various experts to improve our floodplain management and make Iowa safer, stronger, and smarter in the future. The recommendations have been incorporated into 12 different policy sections in the bill being considered by the House and Senate this year. They are a collective group of recommendations, not only affecting development directly, but also some education provisions, some additional research that needs to be done on tiling and stormwater, some of that type of thing. So we feel that the overall proposal is very beneficial, and don't want to make the mistake of only looking at the development portion of it, even though that is the most important in terms of long-term savings for the state.
Are there other sections that you can just highlight for us that we need to know about quickly?
Sure. I mentioned education. Mm-hmm. It would involve both marketing and a public outreach effort.
Telling people not to build in these areas, or what would it tell people?
To also understand how they can protect themselves by acquiring flood insurance if they are in a risk situation. Helping them understand that when you buy flood insurance, you need to have that 30 days before an event occurs. Mm. Some of that type of thing. Helping people understand where they are in a floodplain. Many today still say that they don't know if they're in a floodplain or not. We think that information needs to be improved so people can help themselves. We have recommendations that would adopt stormwater standards for cities to follow, would cause state agencies to look at changing precipitation patterns in developing better criteria for conservation practices, and look at levee investments and where it makes sense, reconnecting rivers and streams to the rivers, and prioritize where any levees would go when no other alternative exists. We're also recommending some wetland mitigation provisions.
Is there a price tag then with this legislation, or is this largely a policy bill?
It's largely a policy bill this year, recognizing what the current status of the state budget is. Over a period of time, more costs would be incurred, but it's relatively minimal as we begin.
All right. I want to bring on Bill Aim, who is the Iowa Department of Natural Resources Water Policy Coordinator. You've been asked to speak to a couple of legislative committees to talk about changes you believe the state needs to make to prevent, 8 flood disasters in 15 years. Is it guaranteed that Iowa will flood again?
Well, I hate to use the term guarantee. It will flood again. The one thing about floods is that they are predictable. We know in general terms how often they will occur, and we know where they will occur, quite unlike things like tornadoes and those other types of disasters that Iowa experiences on occasion. So the whole idea is that, rivers have memories. Those rivers will come out of their banks again, and we need to do the appropriate things to make sure that people and businesses don't suffer because of that.
And when you say rivers have memories, you mean when they come out of their banks, they're going to come out in many times the same spots they did previously.
Exactly.
All right. I think that sometimes part of the confusion is the terminology, the 100-year floodplain, the 500-year floodplain. People think that means that that's going to flood once in 100 years, and we've seen that's not the case. Are we using those terms inappropriately?
I don't know that we're using it inappropriately. Basically, what it is just your odds of being flooded. The difference is that every year you roll the dice again. So it's not like once you've had your 100-year flood, it's not going to flood for another 100 years. The opportunity for it to flood again the next year is 1%, just like it was, in the previous year. So it's more of an odds types of things that it's going to happen.
So what are you supportive of the legislation that Susan just outlined?
The department is, not taking an official stand at this point in time until we see everything that's done, because obviously we'll end up enforcing a lot of it. But I did chair, along with Chuck Gipp of the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship, the task force that put together the floodplain recommendations, and we're very supportive of the recommendations that we came up with. We have to change the way we do things if we expect to have different results.
And that is staunchly limiting development in moving that from limiting development in a 100-year floodplain to a 500-year floodplain, which is a lot larger area. Is that?
Generally speaking, it's a larger area. It just depends on the shape of the valley and everything. Sometimes the difference between a 100-year flood and a and a 500-year flood, maybe 6 inches, and other times it might be 6 feet. So it's it just depends upon the community, the county, where they're doing the mapping in that valley.
All right. Let me talk specifically with Senator Hogue real quick. We want to bring in Vicki Stoller, who's with the Two Rivers Levee and Drainage Association, but I might need to do that after the first break. So let me ask you, Senator, the concern is that you're limiting development in areas that communities have already developed. You're not saying a business in this area, in this 500-year floodplain, has to move, correct? It's new development?
I don't see this as saying that existing businesses or existing development would have to move. And it's not that you can't develop in these areas, but there are sometimes the development we don't want in the floodplain. We don't want to put critical facilities in the floodplain,
which are
hospitals, police stations, jails. Let me tell you, it's a pretty ugly scenario when you're bringing inmates from your jail out through 5 feet of water like they did in Cedar Rapids in buses. I mean, that doesn't work. That's not good for safety. It's not good for public safety. I keep coming back to the heartache and trauma that the people in my district and in Cedar Rapids experienced. And I understand people around the rest of the state who haven't experienced that. People in Des Moines think, oh, it was like our flood in 93 in Des Moines. No way, no how. I mean, we had thousands of homes damaged, destroyed, people's economic livelihoods lost, their life savings gone, 800 businesses flood. We've lost at least 200 of those. We're concerned we're going to lose 100 more businesses this year. And all the public facilities that were damaged. The only thing that didn't happen is thank goodness nobody died. But the trauma and the heartache is severe, and so we are saying, yeah, there are some types of development we don't want in the floodplain. And if you're going to be in the floodplain, make sure you're taking actions to floodproof yourself. And that's what the legislation does. The city of Cedar Falls took a bold lead last December and passed a 500-year floodplain ordinance. I had been up there. I had toured North Cedar. And they're saying, okay, and it's prospective. If you've got a lot already, you're allowed to build there. But they're not going to do any more subdivisions in the North Cedar neighborhood, and that's the right decision to make because we cannot continue to experience these types of losses as a state. $20 billion is $6,000 per Iowan. That's a lot of money. And in these times, we need those resources to be able to do other things. But unfortunately, we're trying to make up the losses we suffered. And one of the problems with the federal policy is it hides the cost from us. FEMA came in, thank goodness, and matched 90-10. Every federal official I've talked to says, don't look for any more 90-10 matches in the future. The federal government's out of money, too, and we've got to change the way we do business.
All right. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Janine Beck. When we come back from the break, we'll talk to a woman from a community that feels like it won't have a future if this legislation is approved. We'll explain. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. Live from the Law Library of the State Capitol Building, I'm Janine Beck, and this is The Exchange. We're discussing legislation that would restrict new development in the 500-year floodplain, far larger than the 100-year floodplain, which guides development now. I'm going to bring on the administrator for the Two Rivers Levee and Drainage Association, Vicki Stoller. Vicki's joining us by phone this morning. Vicki, thanks for being with us on The Exchange.
Good afternoon.
Let me ask you, you're concerned about this legislation. Why?
Well, first of all, floods, I like Bill's comment, or Senator Hogue's comment, about floods. They are predictable. Yes, if we have good information through our weather forecast entity, we can predict them and we know where to fight them. We can defend against the floods, but not against a catastrophic. I was told by a Corps of Engineer last week that Cedar Rapids actually had a 2,700-year flood in the southeast Iowa area near Oakville. we had 7 to 10 feet more than a 500-year flood. That is a catastrophic flood, and there is no way that we're going to protect ourselves against those. That's why they're called catastrophic. I have real concerns about the communities along our rivers that our forefathers built and our ancestors built, because that's where the transportation was. I feel this is going to be a great hardship on the landowners and the communities themselves.
What communities? Let me ask you a little bit about the Two Rivers Levee and Drainage Association. Where are you guys? Who do you represent? What communities are you concerned about the most?
We are in southeast Iowa in Des Moines and Louisa County, and we are the second largest levee and drainage district on the Upper Mississippi. We cover approximately 50,000 acres of prime farmland, a couple, two, three communities from Oakville, south through Kingston, and just outside of Burlington. We also have a animal refuge, and we are very extensive in the area that we cover.
And what is your concern that with this legislation that there needs to be rebuilding in these in the 500-year floodplain?
Well, I think the 500-year floodplain is different throughout the state, and that's what a lot of people don't understand. In elevating structures above a 500-year floodplain in our area, we would have homes or businesses 30 feet in the air,
mm-hmm.
where in other areas, maybe in Cedar Rapids, it may only be inches. So I think we have to look at the watersheds. I believe we also have to look at the history of how often it is flooded before we make any laws that are just one shape fits all.
So do you believe that what happened in 2008 will not happen again? Designing legislation for something that's unlikely to occur again?
I think I'd be very naive to say that I don't think it's going to happen again. There's always that chance. But as the previous speaker said, we can protect ourselves against some floods. I'm not saying all of them.
Vicki, one of the concerns I know that Senator Hoag has expressed is that if there's flooding again and the state puts in some restrictions or doesn't put in restrictions, that eventually, you know, taxpayers are going to say, wait a minute, don't you just live in an area that's a problem, that's uninhabitable in the sense of high water, and why should we bail you out a second or third time? Are you concerned that eventually there will not be financial assistance from the state or federal government?
I think there's always that possibility. Back before the 93 flood, Des Moines County did not have a policy in place to be refunded, if you would, for flood losses. People that choose to live along the river actually do make those decisions, and they take those disasters or the chances of a disaster into account. They make those decisions to live there. I agree with the education program that the legislation provides for. I'm concerned on the funding and who's going to do it. I do believe they need to be educated and know what they're up against. But I also feel that it needs, again, to go by watershed. In our area, we didn't have any losses in 93. We actually flooded from within. We couldn't pump it out fast enough. We are very flat, and we have 5 pumping stations that take the water and pump it back over the levee and into the river. We had not flooded since 1946. And that event was very minimal. It was just inches, and it was due to an ice jam.
So you're just saying you guys were very surprised. How much water in Oakville again? Refresh my memory.
In 2008, our levee overtopped, and we got everything from the Cedar River and above. And as I said, we had 7 to 10 feet more than a 500-year level. In some areas, we had 20 feet of water covering homes. We lost about half of our district. And maybe it could happen again this year. We don't know. But for the last 60, 70 years, we have only flooded in certain areas twice. And I think those kinds of statistics need to be taken into consideration before we make a blanket law that tries to fit everyone.
All right. Let me try to squeeze in a quick call from Dave in Des Moines. If you have a question or comment this morning, you can join our conversation at 1-866-780-9100. Dave, thanks so much for calling The Exchange.
Hey, thanks, everybody. I would just like to say I'm a former member of the United States Coast Guard, and you're not going to stop the water. You won't. So you have to mitigate your losses. If I were still in the Coast Guard and the lady that was just talking had flooded, I'd come save her. But as a taxpaying citizen, I'd want to say, you know, if you want to live in a floodplain, either build your house on stilts or get out of there. I was myself looking for a house. I kept telling the real estate agent in the place I was looking, I don't want to live in a floodplain. You can't stop the water. She was trying to sell me houses, and therein lies the rub. I mean, you're free to live wherever you want in this country, but there's consequences to that. And again, you know, statistically, last year shouldn't have happened. Statistically, this much snow shouldn't be dropping right now, but it is. You cannot believe in global warming. You cannot believe in climate change, but things are getting different. And I don't want to pay for your blind ignorance. Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Dave. Appreciate the time. We're going to take a break in just a minute. But Susan Judkins, as you listen to that, are those the kinds of concerns that communities are coming to you with about this legislation? Well, we can't build our home on, you know, 30-foot stilts or I mean, are there communities that would be more greatly impacted than others?
I think many communities are concerned that this would restrict all development. They don't realize that there's an effort to still allow development so long as certain mitigations precautions are taken. The other concern tends to be uncertainty about the FEMA flood insurance rate maps and where that 500-year floodplain line runs. So we are hearing questions about that.
There was legislation looked at last year, and refresh my memory, about flood insurance and requiring communities that were in certain more flood-prone areas to get flood insurance. Did that happen?
Yes, it requires all communities that have a flood hazard area in their boundaries to participate in the flood insurance program within about the next 2 years. So we know that there are communities taking steps to do that. There are still over 100 that have not.
All right. And when we come back from the break, we'll bring on Alan Kemp of the Iowa League of Cities to talk a little bit about the cost of that. I know that had a financial impact or could on some communities. And we'll talk about this legislation and whether or not to build in the 500-year floodplain. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Janine Beck. Thanks for joining us. I'm Janine Beck, and this is The Exchange. We're live from the Law Library of the State Capitol Building, where we're discussing legislation that would restrict new development in the 500-year floodplain, which is far larger than the 100-year floodplain, which guides development now. It's aimed at preventing future flooding and losses, but some communities worry they'll no longer be able to get funding to help build or maintain levees, or that they would be required to raise homes and businesses to certain elevations within the floodplain. Developers could be prohibited from building housing within that area, and many cities are concerned that they would be prohibited from using land within the floodplain for various purposes. We're taking your calls this morning at 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. And before we went to break, Craig is on the line from Cedar Rapids. Craig, thanks for calling the Exchange.
How are you fine people today?
We're good. How are you?
Great. I'm a flood victim in Cedar Rapids with 11 feet of water in my house. I've talked to FEMA, NPR, FEMA, DNR, Army Corps of Engineers at great length. They will tell you right to your face that they don't want people moving back into these areas, and they try to make rules to make that happen. There is a solution to this. And that is the government, right after a flood, should come in, the government at all levels, buy up all available housing, move the flood victims into it, and tell them that it will be totally paid for. They will also have a choice of going back to their flooded properties, but this way they will be able to see that there is a difference and not just immediately want to go back. And they will be able to contribute to the economy because they won't end up with a double mortgage, bankrupt, and still not a place to live.
All right. Craig, thanks so much for the call. I appreciate it. Senator Hogue, there is a buyout program, and Cedar Rapids is in the process of buying out hundreds of homes, is my understanding. Is it just that it didn't happen quickly enough? Or, I mean, isn't that somewhat the goal, to move these people out of homes that are going to flood again?
Yes, Janine. And first of all, I want to thank Craig for the call. And I think the call reflects, here we are 19 months later, and he's still dealing with the heartache and the devastation that the flood causes. And I just have to remind listeners again, it may not have happened to you, but this is serious business. I mean, this is devastation. It's not Haiti, but it's very, very serious, and people need to begin to understand that. The buyout program process has been way too slow. We have pushed and pushed and pushed the federal government, city government, state government, at all levels to move quicker. And we are hopeful that the buyouts of about 1,200 properties will be completed by this fall now. That deadline continues to slide, and it's really, you know, when you've lost everything, to wait 2 years for a buyout is hard. We need, at some level, we need Congress to change the rules and just have FEMA come in and have buyouts done within 90 days of a disaster, because people need to get on with their lives. We're pushing, and we push, and we push, and everything. People say it will take 2 weeks, and 2 months later, it still hasn't happened.
All right. I want to bring on the executive director of the Iowa League of Cities, Alan Kemp. Alan, cities have a huge vested interest in this. One, they most often want flexibility to develop as they see fit. This is a big local control state where communities are often granted decision-making power. On the other hand, they bear a significant financial cost when buildings are devastated by flooding. So what's the league's role, and what do you think about the legislation proposed?
The reality is you're sort of fighting human nature. Here over the last 150 years, for better or worse, much of our economy has developed along rivers. And so it's going to take a while to make that transition. Cities clearly recognize that there's an issue here, that they're the ones on the front line, so they're always having to deal with this right away. Some of the concerns that have been expressed with the particular legislation is what do you do first? One of the concerns that we've had is, look, the first thing you're going to have to do is develop resources, you know, how to pay for it. You also need to develop some level of expertise, and that's in the area of floodplain managers. Early on during the floods, I was on a telephone conference call with a national group that wanted to come in and provide assistance, and the first question they said is, well, the first thing you need to do is identify your floodplain managers and get information out. And the people on the call in Iowa sort of looked at each other and says, we don't have any local floodplain managers. So obviously there's a big hole that's there that has to be filled. And our argument then is like, until you develop the resources, how you're going to pay for it, and some expertise on how you're actually going to regulate this and get information from the individual communities, it's going to be tough that you're sort of putting it in the wrong way of going about it. The reality is right now the the federal government regulates the 100-year floodplain, and so this is a big expansion to do a 500-year floodplain, and you've got a lot of development in there. And so one of the concerns that I know cities have is, all right, for better or worse, property values matter in the state. And so if you suddenly start putting in place requirements, that can have an impact on the property values, if not immediately, over time, because people can say, well, we don't have to move out right away, but, you know, my value in my home has now been diminished. And that's something we've got to look at. So that's sort of the real concerns we have, is not whether or not this needs to be done. It's really how long we take to do it, and what do we do first in order to make sure that we do it properly.
All right. But Bill Aim, I know, I understand the go so slow mentality, let's do this right the first time, but, you know, you're with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, you're the water policy coordinator. Do they have time? Or is this going to happen before Iowa has its ducks in a row?
Well, I think what we need to do is make sure we have some things in place before that next flood comes. And what we'd really like to see is that, you know, whether we can do this all at one big fell swoop or bite it off in chunks. Cedar Falls, Senator Hoag mentioned a moment ago that at least has stopped the platting of new developments in the 500-year floodplain. The critical infrastructure, let's not be putting new critical infrastructure into these 500-year floodplains. We've got to start somewhere. And it's certainly not the intent of the task force or of this legislation to say, if you're living in a 500-year floodplain, you got to sell your home, your property at a loss and leave. That's not the intent at all. It's to prevent us from making future decisions that are going to be devastating in the long run. And so I think that's what we need to do, is figure out how we're going to eat this elephant one bite at a time.
All right. Let's talk to Bob in Bettendorf. He's been waiting to speak with us. Bob, thanks for calling the Exchange.
I think that a largely libertarian approach to this might be useful. If there are no taxpayer dollars involved in a development, and if the developer understands and the people buying the houses understand that the only aid they will get from the government in case of a flood is they will pull the person out of the house, save their lives, and that's the only help they'll get, then if somebody's foolish enough to build a house in on a floodplain, let them do it. However, I think that when you're talking about the city building a city facility like a jail, or the county building a facility, I think the state has the power to forbid that. They have the power and the right and should forbid cities from doing that.
All right, Bob, thanks for the call. Senator Hoag, I'm going to turn to you. This body, the legislature, is largely a reactionary body. You know, you talk a lot about trying to plan ahead, but when it comes down to it, it's very difficult to win enough votes to do things that are controversial like this. If this is not approved, do you think that the legislature, in the face of a community devastated by flooding, would have the gumption, I don't know how else to phrase that, to say, no, we asked you to make changes, you didn't, and you're not getting state assistance?
Well, that would be very difficult to do, because when people are hurting, we had the call from Craig earlier, when people are hurting, we want to help. And I think that's the way people are, and I would hate to live in a community where people didn't help. So, you know, I think you have to look at this as a unique opportunity to fix this problem. We did not, as a state, we did not fix the problem after the 1993 flood. The state, I wasn't in the legislature at the time, but the state, the governor, legislative leaders, they failed at that time to take the preventative action they need to take. I'm going to do everything I can to try to prevent that sort of future heartache and trauma and devastation. On Bob's point, if we're going to do that, I have suggested at times, as people have said they don't like this, well, maybe we should just have a clear statement that you don't get future help if you build in the floodplain after this date. And so that's one way of doing it. But when the chips are down and people are hurting, I certainly hope to continue to live in a state where people are helpful. Now, you could say, well, maybe government doesn't need to be involved in that. There is another problem with development in the floodplain aside from the damage it does to that person. There is the damage that then does to other people living in that flood, other people in the watershed. As you occupy the floodplain, that drives the floodwaters higher. Mm-hmm. And so it's not, you know, it's not kind of every man for himself here. There is there are some community standards that we need to have. And I hope we take this opportunity to do it.
Because I just want to make sure I'm understanding right, that if the water comes out of its banks and it is not just grassland or wetland to soak it up, but there's buildings and pavement and that kind of thing, it's going to run down stream and hurt the next community farther south?
Right, or it displaces the volume of the floodplain. When you build in the floodplain, and so that pushes the waters farther out to go around those buildings.
Okay.
And so there is a community dimension to it. But to me, the bottom line is that, I mean, it's kind of an old saying, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. How much more are we going to spend on this? And that, you know, that $20 billion number, the reason I put that out there is because it's so enormous and it has taken resources away from other things that we'd all like to be doing as a state.
All right. Let me go back to Vicki Stoller, who's an administrator for the Two Rivers Levee and Drainage Association. Vicki, what's the state of rebuilding in Oakville, and what impact would this legislation have on rebuilding? Do you expect that community to come back?
I'm glad you asked, Janine. Oakville is a very special place. It's a community that's been there for many years. And as I said, they were affected by the 1946 ice jam that gave them a few inches of water. The governor's office has come down and embraced the city of Oakville, encouraged them to rebuild, to stay in the state of Iowa. But yet, the recommendations that are coming out of these workshops and Rebuild Iowa are ironically just the opposite. They will probably force a lot of people to leave. The values of their property will diminish. The legislation is just not real simple. It has to be connected with the new FEMA maps that are coming out, and we're being hit very hard. Our main concern in this area is that we're not trying to build more subdivisions. We are basically farmland. We're just trying to protect what we have. I believe we agree that we have to, before we can manage a 500-year floodplain, we have to do a good job of managing the 100-year first. I believe that the language in the legislation is vague. We have no idea as a state how we're going to afford the revenue to pay for it. And I believe we need to slow the process down to allow communities to understand how this legislation is going to affect them. And as I said before, in various areas of the state, it's going to be very different.
Can you can people rebuild currently in Oakville, or is there some limitation because of the 100-year floodplain?
No, they can currently rebuild in Oakville, and they have, and it's been a personal choice.
But you're concerned that if this legislation is adopted, that the people that have rebuilt will lose property value because further development will be stopped.
Yes. One simple example, and as I said, it's connected to the establishing the 500-year floodplain. The new maps are coming out, and in Oakville, the town is split. The east side of the street is regulated, and the west side isn't. And Janine, it's a very flat town. To me, that is a bit ridiculous. I believe the base flood elevations need to be established first to allow the people to know where those regulations are going to be had.
Mm-hmm.
You can't force people or say we're going to regulate something and actually put the cart before the horse before you know where that area is.
Alan Kemp with the Iowa League of Cities, you were nodding your head. Are you concerned that we're devising legislation on maps that haven't been produced yet?
That's certainly an issue that we have, is that the maps don't even exist. They're probably 5-7 years out at best. The other, I think, concern that city officials have is that a lot of emphasis is being placed upon them and regulation, and yet they're only part of the watershed. The reality is the floods that hit Cedar Rapids, the floods that hit Des Moines happen well up in the watershed in areas that don't have any development that's just pushing it in. And for better or worse, this state has really changed its environment. When the early settlers came here, it was largely wetlands, and that held the water. By plowing and converting to farmland, and putting in tile and drainage, what we ended up doing is increasing the flow of water and the pace at which it goes, and it flows much quicker, and it sort of changed that. And so city officials are at least fearful that, well, you're going to try and solve this on our backs and not consider all of the other players that come into this, that water, you know, rainwater falls everywhere. And so they want to make sure that if this is going to occur, that the onus is not completely put on them, but it's certainly more holistic, looks at the entire watershed and how we control it.
Bill, I know the DNR is looking at that, or has a group, maybe it's Iowa State University Extension, somebody's looking at drainage tiles and farmland and the impact on flooding in Iowa. Is that correct?
There's a huge disagreement among well-respected experts on either side of that, whether tile drainage in the state of Iowa is causing an impact in terms of flooding or whether it's making things better.
Let me back up. I apologize. I'm just not sure everyone knows what that means. You're tiling some of this farmland so that the water runs off it more quickly and doesn't pool and stand in their property, correct?
What it does is to maximize production of the soils, the lowering the water table in that soil profile is advantageous. So what's done is we put drainage tile into the ground approximately 4 feet deep and lower that water table down to that level. So the question before these hydrologists and scientists and everything is the fact that if that land is already totally saturated, is it coming out of the tile lines and the overflow faster than it would if it was just saturated and coming overflow? And that's where my head starts to spin. So that's why we need these experts to do a study and really tell us for sure, is there an impact? And if so, what is it? So that we can get our arms around it. The bottom line still is that we have had historical flooding for years. 1967, the Corps of Engineers, before a lot of this tile went in, were predicting a flood of the size that we had in 2008 in the city of Cedar Rapids. We can go back and look at our floodplain maps for years back, or our soils maps, and determine that those are alluvial soils. They were built on flooding. And a lot of those alluvial soils go right along where our floodplain maps are today. This is not a new phenomenon. It's being exacerbated, perhaps, by what's happening upstream with paving and tile flow and all of that sort of thing. But the fact is that it has been flooding for centuries, not just in the last 50 or 100 years. And that's the key thing. It will flood again in those floodplains, regardless of what we do upstream. Right. Take a look at Iowa City and Coralville Dam. It's still flooded.
All right. Let's grab another call from Danielle in Woodward. Danielle, thanks for calling the Exchange today.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I was a panelist in 1994 at an engineering symposium at Iowa State. It was called Looking Back to Look Ahead, the Floods of 93. And my position was that of the voice of the river, talking about ecology. And I was on a panel with engineers and Ellen Taylor, and a representative from Congressman Lightfoot's office. And I was surprised that the congressional representative said, you know, we're looking at money, and it seems that buying out the people who live in these flood-prone areas makes a lot of sense to us. I see where we have had no change in our behavior, a little more thinking in terms of ecological processes, and I think the conflict is balancing very short-term economic gains against long-term ecological health of our human systems and of natural systems. And I think the culprits are, or what's driving this, are corn and bean subsidies, the Farm Bureau, ConAgra, and I could name a host of other drivers to this. So I'm curious what your panelists think about that.
All right, Danielle, let's put that to a couple of people. Senator Hoeg, she's citing farm groups and federal subsidies that keep crops in time, sometimes right up to the banks in areas that maybe some would say shouldn't be planted. What do you think about that?
Well, Janine, I appreciate the call. I don't think there's any question that we need federal farm programs to be changed so that they promote water retention on the ground and infiltration. Farmers should make money by installing buffer strips in riparian areas, by planting prairie grasses, by restoring wetlands. We need to shift those federal farm resources to deal with this problem. There's no question. Obviously, Iowa needs to continue to grow corn and soybeans. I mean, that's a major part of our economy. We need to continue to do that, but we need to target other resources to deal with the flooding problem. So I agree. I think the caller is right. I thought Alan made a good point about the upstream detention. I do want to say something about the inaccuracy of the flood maps. I don't know in Oakville. I think the entire town flooded. In Cedar Rapids, I know where the floodplain is. It's wherever the water went in 2008. And we've got the flood center now at the University of Iowa to be able to assess this. And we need to get on top of this problem and change the way we do business, get the best information we can. But people need to know flooding's going to happen again.
All right. I want to thank all my guests today. We've appreciated the conversation. You're listening to The Exchange, produced by Catherine Perkins and Jeff Schmidt. We've had also production assistance today from Ben Kiefer and Rosalind Sixby, and technical support from Dennis Reese and John Pemble. I'm Janine Beck. Thanks for joining us. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.